for their fallen weapons. At least they were all moving, as far as Orin could see. Into this scene, three remaining creatures emerged from the uplands. A bantha calf trotted down, followed, improbably, by an Eope mother and her kid. The trio of laggards tromped heedlessly through the chaotic scene, following the herd into the open desert to the northwest. Orin found Mullen and Vika awkwardly getting to their feet. Mullen had taken a bantha horn to the side of his head. He was bleeding from his temple. "Can you fight?" Orin asked. Mullen grunted angrily. Orin took it as affirmative. "Kenobi's playing games," he muttered. He turned, blaster in hand. But something else came screaming down from the stone fissure. A speeder bike and rider, sizzling down the pathway Kenobi had taken up into the mountains. Its sword in a straight line, one that would take it over the heads of the vigilantes and to the open desert beyond. "Blast him! Blast him!" Quick-witted vigilantes caught the vehicle in a crossfire as it zipped past. Several shots struck true, and the speeder bike flashed with fire, spiraling to the right. Its forward strut struck the ground hard. The vehicle and its passenger flipped end over end, finally smashing into an unoccupied repulsor craft. Orin rushed forward. Wreckage was everywhere. A body burned in the debris. Excitedly, Orin approached the rider's side and saw that it was, in fact, a burlap duffel. Half of the smoking bag had ripped open where it had been tied to the handlebars. Without thinking, Orin shoved his hand into the smoldering debris and found the fake rider's stuffing, a bundle of Tuscan head wrappings.
"It's from your wardrobe, Orin,"
Ben said. His voice echoed all around, louder than the crate call and certainly louder than the phantom whisper Orin had heard earlier.
"I brought it from your place."
Looking about in surprise, Orin threw the wrappings away. How Ben was saying it wasn't important. Remembering where he had dropped the loudhailer, Orin dashed toward his landspeeder, piled up against the rock. He skidded to a stop beside it and reached inside the vehicle, fishing for the amplifier's handle. Finding something, he lifted it and stared, mystified, at the Gaddurfi in his hand.
"That's also from your stash,"
Ben called from above. "He's using the loudhailer," Orin realized. Somehow, the man had returned to the floor of the rift on foot in the smoky chaos and switched the Gaddurfi for the loudhailer. But there wasn't time for Orin to contemplate that. Half the posse was staring at him as he held the Tuscan weapon. And wherever Kenobi was, he saw it.
"They're interested in your collection, Orin. The weapons and clothing you've taken from Tuscans in the past. That you've used, you and your family, in strikes against your neighbors."
Aware of the stares, Orin threw the weapon to the ground, repulsed. "What a crazy story," he said, forcing a chuckle. "Dancing with Tuscans is Kenobi's game."
"You had me wrong,"
Ben said, his voice coming from everywhere and nowhere.
"I only wanted to live here in peace. You're the one who's making war. All to sell your protection service."
"It's not ours," Vika yelled, clearly rattled. "Tell them, Dad!"
Orin looked urgently toward her. "Shut up," he implored with his eyes. "I have to do the talking."
"He's wrong," Orin said, facing the others. "We keep some trophies, sure, who wouldn't? But he got this stuff from his friends back there who sent the banthas. And the settlers' call fund isn't ours either. It's a public trust."
"Then tell them the balance. Tell them you haven't been stealing from it to pay your debts. Tell them you didn't attack Tyler Bazaar's father when he wouldn't join, leaving the man hobbled and unable to save himself later when the Tuscans attacked for real. Tell them you didn't attack the Ulbricht place yourself last night. Tell them you didn't flee when I happened along."
Orin straightened, searching for a friendly face on which to fix his gaze. There weren't many. One settler after another looked angered, agitated, or bewildered. And while Obrecht looked ready to explode,
"Is that true, Galt? Is that true?"
Mullen looked at his father mortified, but there was a way out. Orin fished for his best smile and found it.
"People! People! I'm a farmer!" he said, shouting so all could hear. "Like you! I get water out of the air! That man, he gets stories out of it!" He shrugged theatrically. "You've enjoyed my generosity. You know I do well enough on my own. I have all the money I would ever need."
"That's excellent news,"
came another amplified voice, this one from the desert. Orin looked back, suddenly aware of the large hover skiff floating outside the rift. On its deck, flanked by gun-toting thugs, was Moset Benid. He wore a neck brace and held a loudhailer in front of his mouth.
"Chobo wants his money, Orin Galt, and he wants it now."
Chapter 43. A Yark stood flat against one of the pillars and looked down the rocky incline to the settlers far below.
"The Hats people,"
she said, her voice dripping with disgust.
"We can smell them."
The Tuscan cast her eye across the natural corridor.
"You said there would only be settlers."
Ben crouched nearby, holding Orin's green sound device and surveying the scene below. Beneath his cowl, Ben had wrapped a loose cloth over his lower face in deference to the Tuscan's sensibilities. Now he pulled it down and scratched his chin. The human seemed startled by the appearance of the skiff.
"This wasn't in my plan."
The war leader's ire boiled.
"You told us!"
"I told you I'd bring Orin Galt to justice. He could choose between his people's justice or yours."
Ben shook his head.
"I thought he'd turn back."
A Yark didn't care what the settlers wanted. Ben had brought the enemy to their gate as promised, but they'd come in far greater numbers than the clan could oppose. A Yark had stationed the few warriors she had at the other access points, but if the settlers really wanted to follow Ben up into the pillars, nothing could stop them. The high camp would be overrun. Ben had acted quickly then, calling for the Tuscan women and children to herd their precious banthas down into the Arroyo. Many of the banthas had lost their riders in the gorge massacre, and a Yark had been pleased to see them getting some small revenge. The animals had bought them precious time, but now the arrival of the hut's minions had compounded the danger. The criminals did not fear the Tuscans, as all should. It was the huts that had killed Sherrod Het years earlier. A Yark knew that Ben deserved death for bringing this upon them. She would give it to him, were it in her power. But in the light of the suns, she had to admit their fall had begun long before he arrived.
"It went wrong,"
she said, not knowing why she was speaking.
"We are so weak. Tuscans are all so weak because of what happened more than 3 cycles ago."
Ben looked at her curious. "What happened?"
"There was another massacre,"
she said.
"A camp of mighty warriors wiped away. The women and children too."
For some reason, her words seemed to strike a target deep within Ben.
"The children? All killed? A crate dragon? Some other predator?"
A Yark shook her head.
"A predator, yes. But death came on 2 legs, she said. "We know."
"But the children," Ben said. "Settlers don't usually kill them, do they?"
"Settlers orphan. Settlers abandon,"
she said.
"Predator slaughtered."
Ben paused, as if seeming to piece something together.
"I wonder. Ayark saw his eyes fix forward, filling with dread. It looked to her as if Ben was in another place now, imagining or experiencing something that filled his mind with horror.
What?
She asked. Ben regained his composure. Something I'm going to have to look into at another time, he said. I'm starting to suspect the Sand People's confidence may not have been the only victim of that event.
No matter now,
she said, withdrawing from the lookout point.
I must hide my people.
I'll help, Ben said, rising to follow. Protecting homes is my specialty. With that, he turned back and followed her up the incline. Mullen gaped at his father.
Jabba's people? It's too soon! We've got 5 hours yet!
Warren stared wordlessly at the new arrivals. More land speeders laden with lowlifes arrived behind the skiff.
But why now? And how did they know to come?
Settlers trained their weapons on the skiff, keeping the criminals at bay. The vigilantes, already made restless by the Banthas and Ben's words, looked positively rattled now. Jabba's thugs lived right alongside Tuskens in the settlers' list of enemies. Both lived by a strange code in a world to themselves, until they came out to terrorize the peaceful. Now they'd blocked the settlers' access to the desert, even as they themselves had trapped Ben. Waller goggled. His crimson eyebrows flared as he looked at Orin.
Jabba? You dealt with Jabba?
Before Orin could think of a response, Mosep spoke again.
I was told you were taking an army, such as it is, back into the hills. Now why would you do such a thing when a bill is due today?
Vika looked at her father concerned.
It's an old story.
The Nimbinal accountant continued from the deck of the skiff.
People refuse their obligations and try to run. Some take up arms and try to fight.
He snapped his hairy fingers and Jork took up station at the skiff's deck gun.
The afternoon deadline is rescinded, Orin. You will pay us now.
What's this about?
Orin yelled nervously.
Did the Tuscan lover bring you here?
Elated to have hit on another tactic, he brightened as he looked around.
I guess Kenobi works with scum, too.
I don't know who you mean,
Mosep said, growing impatient. Behind the skiff, another vehicle was arriving from the north.
Your neighbor called me.
My neighbor. Orin swallowed, his throat dry. He had rivals among the farmers here. Did one of them know something? He looked around in shock and surprise, anxious to make a good show of it.
Is one of you here trying to set me up? To embarrass me with this nonsense?
The land speeder that had been racing up from behind now passed through the criminals' line of vehicles. Settlers raised rifles against the hovercraft entering their midst, and then lowered them as they recognized the driver. Navigating among the overturned land speeders, Annalene brought the Ruby JG-8 to a stop near one of the pathways leading up the rift. She stepped out near the Galt and held a red comlink high.
I called them, she said.
Aboard the skiff, Mosep raised an identical communicator, the one Orin had dropped in his lair. He smiled toothily.
Good to see you, Mistress Calwell.
Orin gaped at Annalene.
You?
Yes. Catching her breath, she turned to the vigilantes.
Ben's innocent. I heard what Orin said back at the claim. Now you should hear the real story.
Mullen started menacingly toward Annalene.
Woman, you'd better not.
Annalene turned to see Vika approaching from her other side. Vika clutched at Annalene's arm. Her eyes looked wild.
Think about that whelp of yours, Vika said.
Orin could only look at Annalene imploringly. Annalene pulled her arm free from Beaker's grasp, staring at Orin. She spoke with an assurance he'd heard before. The Tower of Power he'd often described her as. "I'm not going to let you hurt someone whose only crime was to help me," she said. "I do care about my family. But what you've done is wrong." Ulbricht stepped forward, rifle in hand, and clearly flustered.
"I don't know what in blazes is going on here."
"I think I do,"
Waller said. He shook his head at Orin.
"We trusted you."
All around, settlers began to turn their weapons away from the skiff and its associated hovercraft and toward the Galts. Orin looked to his right. There was the USV-5 where it had come to rest after the stampede. He started toward it, only to see his precious hovercraft explode in a blossom of metal and flame. Spun around by the shockwave, Orin saw what had happened. On the skiff, Mosep gestured to the Klaatu-Inian at the smoking deck gun.
"Jorks an oaf, but with a big enough gun, even he can't miss. You people can't have Galt until we're finished. He owes us money."
Ulbricht shot a hateful look at the Nimbinul.
"You pirates don't have any say here. This is the Range."
The old farmer's companions raised their rifles.
"Our justice comes first," another settler said.
Mosep glanced up at the suns and mopped sweat from his fuzzy face.
"You really are a trying lot. I told Orin's handler it was a mistake to offer credit to any of you."
He turned the loud hailer to address his thugs.
"Try not to kill the human woman who just drove up. She brought us here. It wouldn't be polite."
He tugged at his neck brace and looked back at the settlers.
"I'm sorry, but if you insist on making this unpleasant..."
A blaster rifle sounded, followed by a high-pitched crack to Mosep's side. Startled, he twisted his torso to see what had happened. There was Jork, staring stupidly at what was left of his exploded and smoking deck gun. Another shot sounded, and the Klaatu-Inian fell backward, dead. Mosep looked toward the settlers.
"I killed me a room full of Tuskens," Ulbricht shouted, rifle sight set on the skiff. "I ain't gonna let you people push me around."
At the sound of the old man's words, all the settlers reached the same conclusion. As one, they turned and fired at Java's thugs. Returned fire came in, sending others to dive for cover behind the upturned land speeders. On the skiff, Mosep screamed and hid behind the nearest Gomorian, only to be flattened when the green thug took a blaster shot between the eyes. Stuck in the open, Orin grabbed at Annalene, pulling her from the crossfire. For a second, she looked at him speechless, until his hand tightened around her arm.
"Kids, let's go!"
Orin yelled. Startled, Annalene tried to pull away, but now Mullen grabbed her other arm. With blaster shots from the thugs coming into the rift, Orin shoved her toward the JG-8, still parked nearby. Annalene yelled, but in the din, only Waller and two other settlers crouching in cover heard. Waller turned.
"Orin, stop!"
With his free hand, Orin pulled his pistol and placed it at Annalene's head.
"We're getting out of here," he said, pushing her toward the landspeeder.
Vika threw an armlet of weapons into the front of the vehicle and slid behind the controls.
"We can't get through all that,"
she yelled, pointing back at the raging battle. Orin had no intention of going that way. He pointed to the sloping corridor leading upward, the rocky path Ben had taken up into the formation.
"There, go!"
Under fire from Mosep's henchmen, Waller could only watch as Orin's daughter gunned the JG-8 up the impossible terrain. The hovercraft whined in protest, slamming against ground it had never been designed to navigate. Stray blaster fire struck nearby. A steering vane caught against an outcrop and snapped off. Then the land speeder left the battle behind. A yacht ran across the high camp, robes flying.
To the caves!
She yelled, herding elder and animal alike. Children and scaly canine massives squealed and ran, leaving chores and meals unfinished near the sacred well. The clearing was a somewhat level theater, surrounded by more of the great towers of stone, half a kilometer up the formation. Most of the day, it was in shadows, but now, at mid-suns, all was exposed. To east and west, crumbling blocks piled against the mountains. Normally, those offered shade and shelter. Today, they were the hiding place of last resort. A Yark shoved blaster rifles into the hands of a pair of nurses heading off to hide the children. She had no confidence they would know what to do with the weapons. She had waited too long to teach them. A mechanical noise came from the gap to the north, the downward passage that had been guarded by a Yark and Ben. A land speeder, she instantly realized. The ascent should have been impossible. Desperately, she looked to either side. Their few warriors were still down at their observation posts, watching the firefight. There was no way to call them. Time was up. She turned to see Ben running with a writhing pair of Tuscan toddlers, carrying them to cover. Gaderfi in hand, she dashed toward him. Handing off the second child to a Tuscan woman in hiding, Ben looked to a wide opening between the titanic stones to the south. "That way," he asked.
"Bad country," a Yark said. "It is too late. They are here. Quickly."
A Yark and Ben slid over a collapsed pile of granite. Looking back over it, they saw the red landspeeder thumping over the rocky entrance in the north.
"Orin," Ben said quietly. "He just won't turn back."
A Yark looked out. The smiling one wasn't alone. His offspring were in the front seats, and he held Annalene in the back, at gunpoint. Seconds later, the landspeeder ground to an anguished halt on the rough terrain, 80 meters from their position. Orin's children stepped out and looked around warily. The warrior quietly set down her Gaderfi. There was a rifle behind her. She reached for it, but Ben touched her gloved hand. "You can't," he said. "They have Annalene."
"She does not matter,"
a Yark whispered to Ben. "I decide that." A Yark shook her head.
"Madness!"
The humans were arming themselves. Would more follow soon? Held by Orin, Annalene called out, "Ben, if you're here, stay away!" A Yark couldn't hear what Annalene's captors said to her after that, but it was clear they were doing nothing to keep her from yelling.
"They mean to flush me out," Ben whispered.
He felt for the lightsaber beneath his cloak, and then withdrew his hand.
"I can't endanger Annalene."
"Then I attack."
A Yark clutched Ben's wrist.
"You too. You have a duty."
"Don't worry."
Ben looked behind to where 3 children were cowering beneath an overhang.
"I told you, I'll protect your people if Orin should..."
"Not that."
A Yark looked at Ben searchingly.
"Can he not know what old Tuscans knew?"
She spoke quietly but quickly.
"Orin Gold showed his true face. You kills him now, or he pursues you forever."
She pointed to the suns.
"It is the way of Sky Brothers."
Ben stared.
This is another legend?"
"It is the legend."
A Yark watched Ben, who contemplated the story. After a moment, he shook his head.
"I won't leave this undone.
But I won't risk Annalene either." He looked to the left, to the forest of monoliths piled against the western mount.
"Stay here,"
he said, crawling away behind cover. I have an idea!
Chapter 44. Warren saw no color in the place, apart from the landspeeder. Even its showroom shine was gone now, buried beneath dust. Vika knelt beside it, examining an undercarriage battered from the raucous ride up the mountain. "Will she run?" Warren asked, still holding Annalene. Vika shook her head. "Stabilizers are gone," she said. "You could fly it, if you don't care where it goes."
"There's nowhere to go,"
Mullen said, looking warily around the abandoned camp.
"How can anyone live in a place like this?"
"I wouldn't call it living," Orin sneered contemptuously. He shoved Annalene toward Mullen. "Hold her." Orin scanned the bases of the stony pylons around them. Reaching a decision, he checked his flak vest and blaster. "Vika, forget the speeder and watch for snipers. I'm going to try something." Cautiously, he walked across the rubble toward the center of the clearing. A sad well sat there, little more than a jagged hole surrounded by dented tin pots. He turned.
"Kenobi!"
he yelled. Nothing but echoes. And Annalene.
"He's too smart for you," she said.
Orin looked back and scowled.
"Shut up."
He turned his attention back to the perimeter. Something was moving out there on both sides of the clearing. He could hear it. But as soon as he looked in either direction, the noise stopped too. "This is no good," Orin thought. He looked back at the route they'd taken to get here. He wished he had some idea what was happening in the battle below. Could he and the kids bring down Kenobi's body and blame the mess on him? Or did they need to keep moving, perhaps crossing enough of the Jundland to reach freedom? He stalked around the well, kicking a pail. From behind a boulder, a spiky reptilian half a meter long bounded into the clearing. A massive, dark-eyed and big-jawed, it charged straight for Orin, who quickly drew a bead and shot. Struck by the orange energy, the massive squawked and fell to the ground. Orin looked back at Mullen and Vika.
"Thanks for the assist," he said dryly. "We're watching for the big game,"
Mullen said. He had Annalene's arm in one hand and his blaster in the other, as his eyes continued to scan their surroundings. Orin looked at the smoking creature and got an idea. Checking first that he was covered, he holstered his weapon and stepped toward the oozing massive. He lifted the carcass. "Let's do some home improvement," he said loudly. Arriving back at the well, he dangled the dripping body theatrically over the hole. "Down you go!"
"Don't!"
Ben's voice called out from afar. Orin lifted the massive by its legs and looked around. "What?" he called out. "You don't want me to poison your friend's well?"
"I was saying that to a yak,"
Ben's voice boomed.
"The one you call Plug Eye, because she's going to shoot you, and you might accidentally drop the animal in anyway."
Somewhere, Orin heard a weapon safety clicking on. He nodded. So the Tuskens were listening to Kenobi. "Glad to have gotten your attention," he said.
Turn back now.
Ben repeated. This time, Orin could tell that the voice was coming from the forest of pillars to the west. "I don't feel like turning back," he said, tossing the creature's limp form down the hole. It bounced twice before hitting bottom with a thud. The well was dry. Orin looked around. No one had fired at him. Ben wanted Annalene alive, and the Tuskens were following his lead. But Ben could change his mind at any moment, and Orin wasn't about to let him call the Sandys down on him. Pulling his weapon, Orin made his way carefully to an opening in the western rocks. He shot a look back at Mullen and Vika and mouthed a command, "Wait for me." Orin stepped amid the megaliths. It was as bizarre a natural formation as he'd seen on Tatooine.
almost designed by nature to form a labyrinth. Mountain wind whistled between the towers, which rose high enough to blot out even the midday suns. He certainly didn't lack for cover here. Getting a clean shot would be another matter.
"I know you're there, Kenobi!" he bellowed.
"Turn back now."
Ben's voice resounded through the rocks, closer than before. Oren spun and fired. The shot hit the base of a tower, leaving a smoking pit in the surface. He kept walking. There was more movement. Footsteps fast and light. Oren fired again, down a long corridor. Nothing. Somewhere he heard a Tusken child crying. Oren growled impatiently.
"Enough games, Kenobi!"
"Agreed,"
Ben said, his voice coming from a different side now.
"So turn back."
"No!"
Oren felt his eyes burning. With his left hand, he pulled out a second blaster. He raised both weapons and fired. Again and again, turning in all directions. He could see movement and dust rising. He only needed one lucky shot. Just one. Blaster fire from the labyrinth resounded across the clearing.
"Ben, watch out!"
Annalene yelled again. Unrestrained by his father's presence, Mullen shoved her forward. Annalene stumbled across the shattered stones and fell. Sprawled across the rocks, she turned around to see the young man aiming his blaster at her.
"I've never been able to stand these snotty cowls," he said, one eyelid twitching as he stalked toward her.
Rifle in hand, Vika looked at her brother.
"Dad didn't say to kill her." "Do we need her now?"
Mullen asked.
"I don't know that we ever needed her,"
his sister responded.
"Do you care?"
"Not really," Vika said. Oren continued to fire as he marched forward. He parted his hands and shot in either direction down the stony aisles, and then ahead and behind. He heard screaming from multiple quarters, the pathetic wails of frightened Tusken younglings. A bonus. All the frustration of the past months, all the worry of the last days, fed through his body and the blasters in his hands.
"Show yourself!"
A cracking sound emanated from above. Reflexively, Oren pointed his blasters upward. He'd been pounced on by Kenobi before, but the man wouldn't get the drop on him again. Except, the rock pillars were too tall for any man to scale, he saw. Then suddenly he heard another sickening snap, and a knife-shaped slab that had balanced for eons slid off the formation, plummeting toward him. Oren leapt forward just before the massive chunk of stone stabbed the ground where he'd stood. Above, a fissure appeared in another stone tower. And another. Oren cast his terrified eyes up and across the long rows of stone columns. This wasn't a groundquake by Bantha. This was something unreal. As if something invisible was pushing against the stones. He ran forward, blaster still clutched in his hands, but his arms bent to shield his face from the rain of dust. Pebbles came down, and then chunks sheared off, striking all around. Oren coughed as nuggets pelted his back. Another huge shard struck just ahead, and then another behind. He screamed, "What's going on?" Oren looked up as a shadow fell over him. Thunder sounded in the rocks to the west. Mullen glared at his sister.
"What in blazes is going on over?"
Before he could finish his sentence, Annalene threw a fistful of sand in his face. Blinded, he staggered, and Annalene grabbed his ankle, pulled it toward her, and bit down hard. Hearing her brother's howl, Vika pointed a rifle at Annalene. She fired once, but her injured shoulder jerked her arm to the left, and the shot missed. With animal instinct, Annalene dived for Mullen's legs, knocking him backward.
She tried to wrestle with him to keep Vika from drawing another clear shot, but Mullen was too strong. Pinning her, he pointed his blaster in her face. That was when Vika screamed. A Yark charged in from the cover to the west, howling a Tuscan war cry. Before Vika could bring her rifle around, a Yark's Gaderfi smashed it from her hands. A return stroke sent the point of the Gaderfi ripping through Vika's side. In agony, Vika clutched her wound and fell away, scrambling to escape. A Yark sprang over her toward Annalene and Mullen. Startled, Mullen pulled the blaster from Annalene's face to take aim at the Tuscan warrior. With all her might, Annalene heaved, forcing the burly man off to the side. His blaster sent the bolt just past a Yark's head, but the Tuscan war leader did not stop. Swinging, a Yark stabbed her Gaderfi point deep in his abdomen. Annalene launched herself clear as a Yark brought the weapon down again and again on Mullen's body.
"Posse kills,"
a Yark said in basic.
"Posse dies."
In a fog of dust, Orin tried to crawl out from beneath the pile of rubble. Every move was painful. When he heard Vika scream, he jolted upright and felt the bones shift in his left leg. He fell to the ground at Ben's feet. In the shadows, the cloaked figure knelt over Orin.
"I did tell you to turn back," Ben said.
Mullen howled from beyond. Ben looked up for a moment and shook his head sadly. Whatever was happening, Orin thought, Ben seemed satisfied that Annalene was safe. The man was in no hurry to leave. Orin spat bitter dust from his mouth.
"Couldn't turn back. Jabba's people there."
Ben shook his head. "That's not what I meant. Your fear led to this. All of it. Fear of losing what you had. It put you on a path to suffering." Ben looked back. From his position on the ground, Orin saw a cowering Tuscan youngling emerge from behind one of the stone pillars to stare at the two humans. Ben smiled reassuringly at the tiny masked figure before looking back to Orin.
"I know how the path ends for you," the cloaked man said. "But there is still time if you turn back now. Accept responsibility for what you've done. That won't square you with the Tuscans, but it will be a start toward redemption."
Orin sat up. He blinked the sand from his eyes.
"I'll lose everything."
Ben inhaled deeply. "Sometimes it takes losing everything to find your true path." Ben started to stand, but then he looked up alert. To the west, a monolith with a triangular slab balanced above it suddenly gave way, unable to support its own enormous weight. Huge rocks tumbled down. The little Tuscan rushed to Ben's side for protection. More stones snapped loose and slammed to the ground. Orin could hear more Tuscan children yowling in the maze as the debris landed. But he was more interested in Ben's reaction. The man had seemed completely unafraid of the earlier phenomenon, almost as if he'd orchestrated the whole thing. But now, one hand on the clinging Tuscan youngling, Ben looked worried.
"Something's wrong,"
Ben said, his voice barely audible.
"I didn't do that."
A Yark brought the Gaderfi down again and again. Trying to reach her feet, Annalene saw Vika crouching nearby. Limp and ashen-faced, Oren's daughter watched as her brother struggled, clawed, and finally ceased to move under a Yark's attack. Then she turned and fled for the northern gap and the trail leading downhill. A Yark lifted her bloodied weapon and glanced back at the departing Vika. But before she could give chase, the Tuscan younglings, frightened by the clamor in the stone forest, poured from their hiding places to the west and clustered around a Yark, separating her from Annalene. Annalene turned to follow, but a Yark surprised her by calling out, "Ben!" Annalene stopped and looked back.
As the crowd of children clutched at her robes, Ayark lowered her weapon and looked to the west. A cloud of gray dust was rising into the air above the standing stones. Ayark, who moments before had been in a blood rage, seemed spellbound. She spoke to the children in her own language, before looking at Annalene and repeating her words in basic.
"See it, Annalene,"
Ayark said.
"See, Ben."
Annalene stared, uncomprehending, at the rising dust. She knew she was in the heart of Tuscan territory, and that she should follow Vega to the safety of the posse. But Ben was still here, and so was Orin. And something big had happened.
"Was it an avalanche?"
she asked as the dust climbed. "Is Ben in trouble?"
"No trouble,"
Ayark said softly. She nodded, watching again to the west.
"No avalanche. I was right."
Annalene prepared to move again, but now the Tuscan children began chattering and tugging at Ayark's garment. The warrior spoke to them hurriedly, clearly concerned about whatever information the excited younglings were providing. Then another deafening boom from the west followed, one that shook the pillars all around. "Is that trouble?" Annalene asked Ayark. The warrior somehow seemed less fearsome now, surrounded by frantic younglings.
"Is trouble,"
Ayark replied. The next sound from the west chilled Annalene's spine. She had heard the sound many times before, and she instantly knew this was no recording.
"Great dragon," she whispered.
"Awakened by the sounds,"
Ayark said. Hastily, she tried to hoist a pair of children while still holding the bloody Gaddafi. More younglings fled into the clearing from the western pillars.
"I must hide the Ulia,"
the warrior said. On impulse, Annalene stepped forward and reached for a young Tuscan's gloved hand.
"I'll help."
Chapter 45.
Orin stared, stupefied, as a monster stormed through the stone pillars toward him. Too large by far to fit into the corridor between the megaliths, the great reptile simply forced its way through like a battle tank, shattering them as it went. Hefty boulders bounced harmlessly off the quadruped's greenish hide. It was a canyon crate, bigger than any Orin had ever heard of. 50 meters long? 60? He wasn't about to measure it. Terrified, he scanned the debris for his blasters. One was there, smashed beneath a rock.
Where was the other?
Could it do any good?
"Kenobi!"
Orin yelled.
"Help me up!"
Clearly startled by the new arrival, Ben looked back at Orin. But more squealing Tuscan brats ran past, shocked out of hiding, and his attention turned to them.
"Quickly!" Ben yelled, pointing to the east. "Go! Forget them!"
Orin tried to get Ben's attention again, but saw that it was too late. The crate had seen them through the dust cloud. Golden eyes glowing, it bounded forward, its clawed feet scrambling easily over the stones. It went for Ben and the Tuscan child first, lashing out with its mighty tail. Orin threw his arm in front of his face, petrified. He looked out to see Ben duck quickly, pushing the child to the ground as he did. The pillar the tail struck shattered, its pieces plummeting toward the man and child at its base. Ben started to move again, to grab the youngling, Orin thought. But instead, Ben thrust his arms high. The rubble halted in midair, as if collected in an invisible basin. Orin looked at it in awe, and then looked back at Ben, mesmerized. Ben's face strained from the effort, but he gritted his teeth and gave a shove to the air. Half a ton of collapsing stone tipped harmlessly away from the prone Tuscan child. Orin gawked. The crate lunged. So did Ben, now wielding a weapon
of gleaming blue light. A lightsaber.
Leaping directly into the creature's path, he sliced out with his weapon. The ripping movement caught the crate in the face, severing a number of its already jagged teeth. Startled, the dragon reared back. Behind Ben, the Tuscan child scrambled to Orin's side, but the farmer was too fearful to shoo it away. Ben was moving again, this time hopping lithely up a rock to the creature's left, attracting its attention away from Orin and the little Tuscan. Mighty rocks grinding to powder beneath its feet, the behemoth wrenched violently. It pounded its horned head against the broken pillar Ben had perched on top of. But Ben was no longer there, Orin saw. A backflip put the man on the crate's hind side with an intervening lightsaber slash at one of its tough back fins. The act seemed only to infuriate the dragon. It charged away from Ben, pulverizing more columns as it did. From behind a teetering formation, a Tuscan elder appeared, carrying an infant. The figure froze in panic before the rushing creature's advance. Ben was running too. His free hand whisked through the air in a purposeful wave, and up ahead of the crate, the Tuscan pair suddenly went aloft, flying harmlessly out of the monster's path. Startled, the dragon slid to a halt and screeched to the sky. It was the sound they'd hear in the oasis, Orin thought. The Tuscan child cowered, burying its head against Orin's shoulder. This time, Orin pushed it away. Ben, the madman, had reached the dragon in the newly created clearing. Any thought of escape had passed. Orin had to see this. Aware now of the danger Ben's weapon posed, the crate turned on all fours and lashed out with its massive barbed tail. Ben leapt over it the first time it passed, ducked it the second, and slashed at it on the third. There was no fourth strike. The crate howled, recoiling. Orin looked on with amazement. The surrounding stone pillars framed the combatants like some impromptu arena, only one far too narrow, and that would surely become Ben's undoing, Orin thought. The crate seemed to realize it too. Hampered by its injured tail, the crate chose a new tactic, crushing Ben with its immense weight. Pointing toward Ben and tilting its head, the dragon threw its body into a roll. With nowhere to leap, Ben disappeared beneath the mass of tumbling fury. Another megalith was struck, and then another, tipping and shattering like ale bottles knocked over on a bar. Shards pummeled the crate, and still it rolled, vanishing in the rising cloud of dust. Ben nowhere in sight. A second later, the dragon appeared again, racing from the haze on all fours toward Orin and the Tuscan child. Orin yelled, but then the crate did too, stopping meters short of them. Its head turned, its pointed beak-like mouth snapping in the direction of its shoulders. And now Orin saw why. Ben was there, clinging to the creature's jagged back, his tunic dirtied and torn. Somehow, he had survived the roll and wound up on top. And he was no passive rider. He raked the creature's haunches repeatedly with the lightsaber. That was what had stopped its advance, Orin realized. And stopping for the crate was deadly. Hopping from scale to stony scale, Ben landed astride the monster's neck. Finding a weak plate in its carapace, Ben plunged his blue blade in. The crate screamed, louder than any of Orin's sirens ever had. It shuddered, and Ben had to fight to stay atop the beast. But he did, and his lightsaber found a home again inside the animal, this time inside its primitive brain. The dragon died, its head thudding to rest, meters from Orin and the child. Mesmerized, Orin looked at the massive carcass. A nasty black tongue slipped from its mouth. Beside Orin, the youngling glanced back once at the dragon and then at his savior, before scampering away without a word. Ben slipped off the creature's back and stared silently at it. To Orin,
Ben seemed satisfied in the first moment, and then crestfallen in the next, as he seemed to realize what he'd just done in front of his witness.
You're a Jedi,
Orin exclaimed. Ben said nothing. His arms hung at his sides, the lightsaber limply pointing toward the ground. Orin's mind raced. He thought back to the Hollow news he'd seen in Anchorhead a while back. There'd been some kind of coup waged against the Republic by the Jedi, he thought. Orin didn't know much about Jedi. It had never made sense to him why the Republic would put its faith in a group it neither controlled nor understood. It wasn't smart business. Something must have gone wrong, because the Jedi had been purged, giving rise to the Empire. That's why you're here, Orin said, clawing at one of the rocky walls in an attempt to stand. That's why you're hiding. They're looking for you. Everyone. Ben just looked at the crate corpse. But he had not deactivated his weapon. And at once, Orin realized the danger he was in. Ben had just killed a crate dragon. And now his secret was out. Orin winced as he tried to move, supporting himself against the stone towers.
You're going to kill me.
Ben looked back at him. I haven't decided about that.
You haven't decided?
A weak smile came over Ben's face. I'm not inclined to kill the Silence people. That's something you'd do. Orin staggered from one stone surface to another, trying to make his way to the clearing. Behind, Ben sighed and turned to follow. But he walked slowly. And as he did, he switched off his lightsaber and returned it to its hiding place beneath his robe. He's not going to kill me, Orin thought, forging ahead against the pain. That led to his next thought.
I've got a card to play.
Orin would go off-world and visit this empire and become something again. He had something to sell again. Ben Kenobi's hide. To blazes with Tatooine, with all of it. Struggling, he stepped out into the light of the suns. Annalene was nowhere to be seen, nor Vika. But Mullen was there, on the ground near the JG-8. A lone mastiff stood over his body, feasting. Heart in his throat, Orin dragged his broken leg across the clearing. The mastiff, done gorging, wandered away. Orin reached his son's side and collapsed onto the ground beside him, wailing. Mullen was dead at the hands of a Tusken, just like his beloved younger son, Vika's twin. Where was Vika? Squinting, he saw footprints and a light trail of blood heading off to the northern exit. Was it Vika's blood or Annalene's? Would Vika really have fled back to the posse? If so, there was no helping her now. Any more than if the Tuskens had gotten her. Ben approached, staying a respectful distance away. Orin looked up from the mess that had been Mullen. Did Ben expect him to repent now? After all this? He snarled hatefully.
I'm going to tell them! The Empire! And they'll destroy you!
Ben folded his hands together and looked at the ground. Orin struggled to stand again.
Did you hear me, Jedi? The Empire will destroy you! And everything you love!
Ben shook his head. They've already done that. The farmer ignored him. He staggered toward the damaged landspeeder.
You better kill me now, because I mean it!
He heaved himself into the vehicle.
I'll do it, Kenobi!
No, you won't, Ben said. I've seen your future. I don't think you're going to live much longer.
Because of you!
Because of you. Because you didn't turn back. With that, Ben pivoted and started walking away. Orin gawked at the man, but only for a moment. He activated the JG-8, which groaned in protest. There was no going back, not with the posse and the crooks down there. No, there was only forward. Through the opening to the south and whatever lay that way. If Vika lived, He'd find her again somehow. Ben simply stood and watched as the vehicle lurched forward a few meters at a time, starting and stopping fitfully. Orin fought with the controls, pounding at the dashboard with his fist.
Blast you, move!
The younglings hidden, Annalene re-entered the clearing from a narrow opening to the east. Visiting Tuscans in their place of last resort was unnerving on its own, but she nearly turned right back around when she saw Orin hovering toward her in the battered JG-8. Then she realized he wasn't heading for her at all, but rather making for the exit to the south. Orin looked even more beat up in the vehicle, his hair covered with dust and his mouth bloodied. He seemed to be paying her no mind. Looking back, she saw Ben standing 50 meters away, making no effort to pursue. Orin seemed to notice her at last when the reluctant land speeder came to another sudden stop. Annalene could barely recognize the man she knew, but for the wicked smile that came over his face when he saw her. His words dripped with delightful venom.
"Ben's been lying to you," he said.
Annalene shrugged.
"You did it all the time,"
Orin sneered. But before he could say anything else, the Tuscan he knew as Plug-Eye emerged, Gaddurfi in hand, from the western labyrinth near the southern opening. The adversaries saw each other. Orin took aim and crushed the accelerator. The JG-8 seemed to forget its reservations, gunning forward. The Yark stood stoically as Orin raced to ram her, until the moment she hurled her Gaddurfi. The heavy implement spun through the air, striking the windshield with terrible force. A spray of glass showered Orin. His windshield smashed for the second time by someone he'd angered. But the landspeeder surged forward anyway, striking the Tuscan warrior with full force and carrying her with it toward the southern exit. Annalene pursued the landspeeder. Orin couldn't see anything through the fractured windshield, she realized, but he was accelerating nonetheless. She skidded to a stop in time to watch the hovercraft miss the narrow bantha path that led down the side of the cliff. The vehicle sailed freely for seconds until, lacking anything for the anti-grav units to rappel against, it tumbled downward, end over end. It vanished in the bad country. Meters behind Annalene, Ben ran up.
"A Yark!"
he yelled. Annalene looked down. Off the edge of the sheer drop from the bantha trail, a Yark clung to a jutting rock. Annalene scrambled to the side and reached down for the raider's hand. Dazed, the Tuscan stared up at her, jeweled eye gleaming in the suns. Then the Tuscan murmured something, and Annalene felt a Yark's grip loosening. Reaching Annalene's side, Ben leaned over her shoulder and looked down at a Yark. "You want to live," he said. "Remember?" For a moment, a Yark didn't move. But then, her hand tightened around Annalene's. The settler and the stranger hauled the warlord up. Bowed but unbroken, a Yark knelt and gazed at the smoke rising from the canyon hills below. The Jundland was unforgiving. "You have what you wanted," Ben said.
"Not all."
A Yark turned back. Straightening, she pushed past Ben and Annalene and climbed back onto the plateau.
"But deal is done. You go."
Annalene nodded. She could hear the sounds of pounding boots. The Tuscans would be returning at any minute. But with Ben there, she felt no fear at all. "I thank you," he said to a Yark, bowing. Standing before a passageway into the labyrinth, a Yark looked back coolly.
"You remembers, Ben," she said. "You knows what you can be."
With that, she slipped back into the shadows. Annalene and Ben walked swiftly across the clearing, stopping only at Mullen's corpse. Annalene blanched then, and turned to gaze back in the direction of Orin's departure. Ben looked at her.
"I'm sorry," he said.
"I'm not," Annalene replied. Turning, she embraced him. It was not a passionate hug, but the exhausted collapse of someone who had had a very long day, and night, and day. This embrace, Ben did not refuse. She looked up at him and started to speak. He spoke.